Blog Talk Radio.
Edition of the Cyril Quinn Review on this 11th of January 2014 as we discuss the world of sports. 347-215-6180 is your call number. You can always follow me on Twitter at William Giro or hit me up at facebook.com/CyrilQuinn or go to my website CyrilGiroQuinn.com. Well, eight teams and just a couple of weeks of football left. The divisional playoffs is where we start. Best weekend in all the football. The big boys come out and play with the top two seeds from each conference. Coming off a great wild card weekend, you have some very good matchups. Really, no game. I mean, out of all these games, out of these four games, none of them, all four of them should be very good games. And to me, I'm looking at these games, it's all about the quarterbacks. I mean, you know, look at New Orleans, Seattle, which will kick off the afternoon at around 4:30, 4:40. You have two quarterbacks who were told they were too short. The 6 foot under club in Drew Brees and Russell Wilson. Drew Brees, one of the best quarterbacks in the league and certainly a Hall of Famer. And you have a Russell Wilson who's even shorter than Drew Brees, who has gotten off to as good a start and who, as any quarterback in NFL history in terms of record, facing off being on a team that is expected to get to the Super Bowl. Can he handle it? You know, second-year player on a team that's expected to get to and probably the favorite to win the Super Bowl, to be honest with you, in the Seattle Seahawks. Then tonight, you have Young Lion versus Old Warrior, Andrew Luck versus Tom, the legend, Brady, in a matchup of, you know, will this be the passing or the snatching of the torch? A lot of people think it could be. There are a lot of people, and I mean more than I would expect, that like Indianapolis. We'll get to that later as far as the picks. But a just classic quarterback matchup of, again, of established Hall of Fame guy versus a guy in Andrew Luck whose legend is building week by week, comeback by comeback. That's all there is to it. That was one of the best comebacks in NFL playoff history last week against when they came back against Kansas City. From 38-10. Sunday, San Francisco and Carolina. Two guys, one a third-year player, and the other both third-year players, but Cam Newton's been a starter his whole career. Two guys who beat you with their legs, but in different ways. Yeah, Colin Kaepernick, who, you know, basically almost single-handedly beat the Green Bay Packers last week with almost 100 yards rushing, versus Cam Newton, a guy who has taken that next step from being that flashy quarterback into a winning quarterback. This year, Cam Newton certainly had an MVP caliber season. Again, Cam Newton doesn't beat you with his speed in terms of when he runs. He beats you with his power when he runs. And finally, wrapping it up, certainly Manning versus Rivers, a team that has been the nemesis, along with the team that has been the nemesis of Peyton Manning, the San Diego Chargers, for years in the playoffs. And, you know, you have Phillip Rivers, who about 4 or 5 years ago was considered to be an elite quarterback. Had two bad years, but now this year has came back and has ascended again to being one of the better, to a legit top 10 quarterback in the league. Can he upset Peyton and the favorite Broncos, who come in with as much pressure as any team has had in recent memory? Matter of fact, come in as, which is, Peyton Manning has as much pressure as any player in recent memory, especially considering that he's already won a Super Bowl. I mean, he has to get to a Super Bowl. Peyton Manning doesn't get to a Super Bowl, he'll get destroyed. I think he's going to get destroyed by football people. I mean, that's all there is to it. So, four great matchups, eight excellent quarterbacks, all of them various styles. And, again, at least one of these teams, at least one of these home teams will lose. History tells us that since 2007, at least one road team has advanced to the NFC Championship. Some years it's been two. But again, since 2007, at least one road team has advanced to play in the conference championship. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Cyril Coleman Review. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we will have some Saturday morning headlines. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Coleman Review. We'll be right back. After the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of Cyril Coleman Review, 347-215-6180 is your call number. Again, if you don't think that you need a franchise quarterback to do anything in the NFL, look at the eight quarterbacks that are playing this weekend, and look where they rank in the pecking order in terms of best quarterbacks in the league. I mean, you're not talking about just eight, you know, of the top quarterbacks in the league playing. You're talking about three of the greatest ever. I mean, Brady, Manning, and Drew Brees are three of the greatest, probably three of the top, I want to say probably three of the top 15 quarterbacks of all time. Manning and Brady are probably two of the top, you know, six or seven. And Brees, when his career is done, is going to could crack the top 10 of all time when his career is said and done. So if your franchise wants to do anything, you gotta have one of these franchise quarterbacks. I mean, there's no getting around it. Even in college, you gotta have a big time quarterback. James Franklin has been named the head coach of Penn State. Franklin, of course, was was a former coach at Vanderbilt, did a tremendous job with Vanderbilt in his 3 years. They went to three bowl games. And again, if you can win at Vanderbilt, you can win anywhere. I mean, Vanderbilt in the SEC, you know, he can recruit. Listen, now he's taken over a tough situation with Penn State. They still have sanctions until 2016. They'll start to get better as years go along. And some of the sanctions will start to loosen up, but it is still a difficult situation. I'm kind of surprised that he took the job, considering that, you know, he was one of the hot names in all college football for some other jobs, possibly. But I guess, you know, listen, USC got hired Sarkisian. Texas went with, of course, with Charlie Strong. So, after that, you know, it really, I guess the pickings might have been slim after that. And he felt like, listen, Penn State, Bill O'Brien did a great job at Penn State, to say the least. Bill O'Brien left that program in pretty good shape to be good, to be decent for the next couple of years. Once Franklin weathers the storm with the sanctions, there's no question that he'll have an opportunity to win big at Penn State. It's still Penn State. And again, give Bill O'Brien a tremendous amount of credit for stabilizing that football program following the just fiasco with Joe Paterno and Jerry Sandusky and company. So Franklin is the new head coach of Penn State. Lane Kiffin, a guy who's had you know, if you're unemployed, you need to go talk to Lane Kiffin. You'll find a job. You need to talk to Lane Kiffin or his agent. Because this guy, it doesn't matter how bad he is, doesn't matter what he can't, doesn't matter how many times he gets fired, he's going to find a job. He's going to have a job, period. So, and he's going to get a job, he's going to get great jobs. Offensive coordinator has been hired as offensive coordinator of Alabama. Of course, he's certainly working under Nick Saban, same staff as Kirby Smart, defensive coordinator. Listen, obviously he's qualified. Nick Saban's not going to just hire, an ordinary Joe. So I'm not even questioning his qualifications for this particular job as a coordinator. But think about some of the jobs he's had, and he's not that old. What, Lane Kiffin is early 40s, 42, 43, if that. He's very young. I mean, he's had, you know, head coach of USC, head coach of Tennessee, head coach of the Oakland Raiders. And it is the Raiders, but still, it's still an NFL job. I mean, he's had some extremely high-profile jobs. And even when he gets an assistant job, not a head coach, it's high-profile. It's Alabama. So, again, the guy has a gift for not only getting a job, but getting a top job. 347-215-6180. Is your call number. When we come back, we'll have the Redskin report and introduce you to the new head coach, Jay Gruden. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Redskins report. Redskins finally get their Washington. Finally, it didn't take that long, but they do get their new head coach, Jay Gruden, brother, of course, of John Gruden, and also former now former offensive coordinator of the Cincinnati Bengals, becomes the, I believe, 29th head coach in Redskin history. The 8th under Daniel Snyder. You think about that. Think about that for a second. The two numbers I just gave you. 29 head coaches in Redskin history. Eight of them have came via Daniel Snyder. Daniel Snyder's been around, you know, only for 14 years. Just unbelievable. But Gruden, of course, comes from Cincinnati. Helped develop Andy Dalton. Helped, you know, improve their offense. Even though the last 3 years they've been god awful in the playoffs, so has Andy Dalton. One touchdown and like 6 interceptions. But, you know, he's a coordinator, not a flashy name, has an extensive resume as a offensive guru, played with a great AFL player, a CFL player, I think he's in the Arena Bowl, Arena League, is in the Arena League Hall of Fame, I believe. So, you know, he knows offense. He knows quarterback and he knows offense. But listen, I don't know what kind of coach Jay Gruden's going to turn out to be. What I do know is, I know a couple of things. I know that, number one, it's already some red flags because he has not picked his own staff. Now, he's going to hire the majority of his staff, but he already has inherited Raheem Morris and Jim Haslett. Raheem Morris is going to get a promotion. He was defensive backs coach, but he's expected to get his contract up. He's expected to get a bigger role, which is amazing to me, considering the Redskins had one of the worst defenses in the history of the franchise. I mean, how many secondary breakdowns did the Redskins have over the course of the season? But he's getting a promotion, basically. Jim Haslett, listen, I understand the special teams was historically bad, and the offense had a number of three and outs, which did not give you maybe a clear gauge of how the defense played. But again, bottom line is defense is giving up like 30 points a game and was ranked in the bottom half as far as yards given up. So I don't understand how, if I'm an incoming coach and I see, I inherit a 3-13 team, nobody's coming back. I don't care who it is. Nobody. I'm bringing in my own people. And we're starting fresh. There's no two ways about it. It's not like, it's not like a Detroit Lions situation where you inherited really a tremendous offense or you have a great defensive line. I mean, the Redskins were 3-13. Or it's not like the Bears. And trust me, they didn't get fired. But if you inherited a team that just missed the playoffs, that has one great unit or a particular unit on the team, you say, you know what? Or you have a legend on the – or you have a legendary coach on the staff. Like, if you have Dick LeBeau, and I know it's still a struggle, but if you have a Dick LeBeau, then you say, then you might think about keeping a guy on the staff. Or you have a great special teams coach. But the Redskins – there's no coach on that staff that I would have kept. None of them. If I'm an incoming coach like Jay Gruden. Now again, he's going to bring in the majority of his people, but you're keeping your defensive. He's going to keep Jim Haslett and Raheem Morris. And I don't understand. To me, I don't understand that. And the mistake that's being made, and not only by the Redskins, but the mistake that's being made by so many teams with this hiring process of coaches is they're getting caught up in defensive guru, offensive guru, quarterback coach. Just get the best coach. Because the best coach can coach anybody. I mean, you can't have a guy who's just going to focus on the offense and just going to lead the defense to, a coordinator or just going to delegate. That's not the guy. I don't want a delegator. I don't. Unless you have Peyton Manning or Tom Brady running your offense, I don't want a delegator. And the reason I say that is those two quarterbacks are all-time greats who And this just in. I'm going to stop this for a minute. Alex Rodriguez has just been suspended for the entire 2014 season. And I repeat that. Alex Rodriguez has just been suspended for the entire 2014 season. He now, the suspension has been as a reduction. Okay? Remember, he the original suspension was for 211 games. I guess he, in baseball, his lawyers settled on 162 games. So that probably is going to end this. I don't think A-Rod's going to protest any further. He's going to protest anymore. It's probably going to end. So that probably will end the part of this segment. But again, he has been suspended 162 games the entire 2014 season. We'll see how it plays out, but I would venture to say that this is probably the end of it. And, you know, great news for the Yankees, because now the Yankees, because he's suspended for, you know, PEDs, they will have that money. They will have that money off their, not salary cap, but it's like a salary cap, often in terms of not having to pay those luxury taxes. So, we will keep you updated on any more details that happen in that particular case. But Alex Rodriguez has been suspended for the entire 2014 season. But getting back to the Redskins, teams make a mistake of targeting a offensive defensive guru. Just get the best coach. I mean, John Harbaugh is a special teams fanatic, okay? But, you know, look how his quarterback has developed. Look how the rest of it, I mean, he controls the entire team, though. You know, look how Joe Flacco's developed into a Super Bowl winning quarterback. That's won playoff games prior to this year, won playoff games in every year of his career. Bill Belichick thought of being a defensive guy. He and Tom Brady, he's right in Tom Brady's face when he has to be. I mean, you got to get the best coach. You got to get a guy who coaches the entire football team. I'm not big. Listen, Mark Trestman is an offensive guru, quarterback guru, what you want to call him. Did the Bears make the playoffs this year, or did I miss something? Or did they not have a historically bad defense, the worst defense in Bear history? Now, I don't want to hear about the injuries. So New England had injuries as well. So everybody has injuries. You know, you have three phases of football. You have offense, defense, and special teams. And, of course, Jay Gruden had ties to Bruce Allen as well as Raheem Morris back in the Tampa days. And, if you want to consider that a good thing, you know, Bruce Allen, from what I understand, was a major part of the interview process. Until the Redskins get a real general manager, in terms of personnel and picking coaches, it doesn't matter who the coach is until they get a real general manager. So I didn't have any real response to Jay Gruden being hired. He has a lot of work on his hands. First thing, before everybody talks about RG3, the first thing he's done to fix is that the defense and special teams. I mean, obviously RG3, they need to get RG3 right, but the defense and special teams to me will be the first thing that needs to be fixed on that football team. But we'll have plenty of time to discuss that in the coming months as we approach as we are deep into the offseason. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we will look at Saturday's games, and I'll give you some picks on that. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. 347-215-6180. A couple things in the NBA. Last night you had a very good game down in Brooklyn and Miami. Brooklyn taking out Miami in two overtimes. LeBron fouls out. Wade didn't play. Brooklyn's played well of late. Five straight wins, beating four teams with winning records. Had a win over Golden State. Snapped their 10-game winning streak or 11-game winning streak earlier this week. So Brooklyn started coming together a little bit. Still need to get Darren Williams healthy. And still to get Darren Williams healthy. Obviously, the story of that game was, again, LeBron fouling out, which is only the third time in his career that he has fouled out. But regards to that, Brooklyn still had a very that's a very good win for them. Lakers getting just ran over by the Clippers by 36 points. This is probably, again, Lakers with all kinds of injuries to just seemingly everybody. But, Lakers are going to be a Lowry team this year. I mean, there's no two ways about it. They're going to be a Lowry team. And to me, again, it's the best thing for them. I mean, to zip in and make the playoffs as a 7 or 8 seed in the Western Conference is, you're wasting your time because you're not getting past. You're not getting through San Antonio or Oklahoma City in the first round. I have no chance of that. So, it's not even, if you're not a top four seed, it's not even a point. Top four or five seeds, there's really not even a point in the Western Conference. That's how difficult the Western Conference is. So, Mike D'Antoni said that Kobe Bryant could be back by January 28th. We'll see. Nash probably, I would have to think that Nash is going to retire at some point. He hasn't played all season long. He's 39 years old. We'll see what happens with that. But I don't think Nash is going to play. Kevin Love just ripped his teammates a couple of days ago in a loss they blew a game against against Phoenix. And Minnesota has been, Minnesota's played some okay basketball this year, but they've been just awful in close games. I think they have something like 0-10 in games that decided on 5 points or less or 2 points or less, something like that. But they've been terrible in close games. And Love apparently called out J.J. Barea and Cunningham for not cheering during timeouts, for not standing up and cheering. So, when it gets to that point, it basically seems like it's time to, get out of town. And there are a lot of talks that, Love, we know he's an L.A. guy, grew up in L.A., went to UCLA. Certainly in free agency, the Lakers would be the favorites to pick him up in 2015. But, possibility, with this Gasol having an expiring contract, possibility that, Minnesota may move him around the trade deadline. Now, if you're Minnesota, you don't hold out for Paul Gasol. You try for Kevin Love. You try to get the best possible deal. You try to get some multiple draft picks. Try to get an all-star caliber player or some young talent. But who knows? I mean, the Paul Gasol deal, again, it is an expiring contract. Gives them some moves, some flexibility in terms of financially to probably possibly go out and get a couple free agents. So that might be – that's certainly an option for Minnesota moving forward. But the one thing is that he's not staying in Minnesota. So the countdown now begins whether or not, whether you trade him, whether you move him. Because if you don't move him, he's going to walk and you're going to get nothing for him. 347-215-6180 is the call number on this latest edition of the Silicon Review. When we return, we'll do a segment of Are You Kidding Me? That's coming up on this latest edition of the Silicon Review. We'll be right back. latest edition of the Central Corner Review. North Carolina Syracuse about to tip off. Which North Carolina team will show up is the question. Syracuse coming in number ranked number 2, undefeated, 15-0, 2-0 in the ACC. Clearly, Syracuse is clearly the team to beat in the ACC. Both North Carolina and Duke have struggled. Duke lost to Notre Dame last week. North Carolina is 0-2 in the ACC, losing a home game to Miami, who, by the way, lost every single one of their players from last year's ACC championship team. So we'll see again. We'll see which North Carolina team shows up. North Carolina is undefeated against ranked opponents and just 7-5 against unranked opponents. Amazingly, something I've never seen before out of any North Carolina team be this erratic over the course of the season. So we'll see what happens with that. Of course, we had a divisional playoff weekend, Seattle hosting New Orleans, 4:30, the Saints trying to rebound off that just beatdown they took in Seattle a few weeks back, 34-7, a game that got away early with turnovers, and Seattle just it became like an avalanche real quick. So second time around, can the Saints rebound? Saints coming off a very good win last weekend against on the road against Philadelphia with the running game and their defense. So we'll see what happens with that. But right now we're going to have another segment of...
Are you kidding me?
Dan Le Batard, who's on ESPN, of course, columnist, writer down in Miami, has been banned from voting for the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame after he turned his ballot over to Deadspin for the readers of Deadspin to vote on. Le Batard claimed that he was tired of the, his exact words were, disenchanted with the process of the Baseball Hall of Fame. Now, listen, we know the Baseball Hall of Fame has some major issues, and we'll talk more about it in a couple minutes, but you can't listen. It's still a ballot where that means something. You can't turn it over to Deadspin. I mean, come on. Just don't vote. I mean, if you don't like the process, just don't vote. Or give up your ballot. To turn it into Deadspin, really. It's not like Le Batard needs a publicity. It's just, one of those things that you just don't do. It still means something as a sport. You still have to have some integrity as a sports writer, as a sports personality, as a guy who has a vote for the Baseball Hall of Fame. You can't turn in your baseball. You can't turn in your Baseball Hall of Fame ballot to Deadspin. Come on. And part of the reason why Le Batard turned in his what led Le Batard to do this, Craig Biggio got 74.8% of the vote, 2 votes shy of eligibility of being a Hall of Famer. Craig Biggio, who has close to 300 home runs, 3,000 hits, to me, for him to be in the mid-70s, there's no trace of steroid use as far as amongst the writers and fans and people in baseball. So I don't understand how Craig Biggio did not get into the Hall of Fame. I don't get it. Now, you don't want to vote him on first ballot last year? Okay, that's fine. But to make him wait another year, and he'll get in next year because he was within 2 percentage points, so he'll get in next year automatically, or there'll really be patient. Or embarrassment if he doesn't get an extra. So, Bill. Again, I don't understand. We had a little technical problem there. We're back on the air on this latest edition of the Serial Clone Review. How Craig Biggio does not get into the Hall of Fame. I don't get it. I've never looked at Biggio as an on-the-fence guy myself. That, to me, again, I grew up, and I don't think this has changed or the number has been devalued. 3,000 hits is 3,000 hits. Now, home runs, has home run been devalued? Yes. Are saves By the leaf pitchers devalued, yes. Hits are not devalued in my eyes when you get 3,000. That, to me, that is a magic number in baseball. It's a magic number. So to me, that's automatic. You get 3,000 hits, that's automatic. That's automatic Hall of Fame. I mean, there's no, I would love to see how many players in baseball history did not make the Hall of Fame on the first ballot. Every player who's had 3,000 hits is in the Hall of Fame, but I would love to see how many players had to wait or how long they had to wait to get into the Hall of Fame who had 3,000 hits. So, I mean, this is going to be Biggio's third. Next year will be his third year on the ballot. So, I mean, the Baseball Hall of Fame, we know it is the toughest. And I kind of respect this, that you really have to earn your way into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Unlike the NBA, they're not going to just let anybody in. So I kind of respect that part of the process. But it is pompous. I mean, let's be honest. Like, you know, a Hall of Famer is a Hall of Famer. You know, how a guy is a Hall of Famer in year three, in year 10, and not in year three, four, or five, or year two is, you know, is beyond me. Because I look at a Hall of Famer as being a Hall of Famer. Certain guys, again, there are special cases where certain guys are on that fence. Certain guys are cool. I mean, Andy Pettit will be one of those guys. You know, Mike Mussina will be one of those guys. So I understand that stand from that standpoint. I get it. Certain guys you can go either way with. But more times than not, you're either a Hall of Famer or you're not. Three four seven 215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll look at the matchups of the divisional playoffs that's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Coon Review. We'll be right back. Here's your call number on this latest edition of Cyril Coon Review, a divisional playoff weekend in the league where no contract is guaranteed. First game, of course, New Orleans, Seattle. Three of these four matches, by the way, are rematches. Only one only two teams that meet for the first time, you know, Indianapolis and New England, and they've had so many, of course, battles between Manning and Brady over the course of the last decade or so. But three of the other three matchups are rematches from earlier this season. You know, again, that first New Orleans Seattle game was just a nightmare for New Orleans. Seattle got off to a fast start, never looked back. Turnovers, breezed it. Seattle's secondary completely shut down New Orleans' receivers and Drew Brees. I think that probably was the worst game of Drew Brees' of the season for Drew Brees and the New Orleans offense, being only held to 7 points. New Orleans has to get off to a fast start in this game, even if it's just opening drive for a field goal. You have to get that crowd settled down. You have to run. They're going to have to run the ball. It's going to be the key. I mean, to me, it's going to be two keys to this game. Number one, the New Orleans running game, and two, New Orleans' receivers winning the battles at the point of attack against Seattle's secondary. Seattle has the best secondary in football. They also have the most physical secondary in football. I heard somebody mention this morning. It's true. They pass interference basically on every play. It's just like the old Pistons back in the day with Dumars and Isaiah and John Sally. You know, they foul you on every play, and they understand that the refs can't call every foul on every play. So that, to me, you know, they're gonna be physical. Can Jimmy Graham, Colston, you know, those guys, Lance Moore, you know, Sproles out of the backfield, can those guys get off the line of scrimmage? Can those guys get some free releases? Can those guys, you know, be able to get through the jams that Sherman and Maxwell and those and Earl Thomas and those other players are going to do are going to have against them? So that, you know, the Saints have to win, if not both of those matchups, at least one of those matchups, where they either have to run the ball or their receivers are going to have to win the matchup versus that great Seattle secondary. Watch out. Watch, you know, if there's one negative thing for Seattle going to this game, Russell Wilson over his last four games did not play well, did not end the season well. His quarterback rating was like in the 70s. So was that is that a trend, or is that something that, you know, was he just in a little mini slump? Was he just in a little, you know, mini slump that some of the quarterbacks sometimes go through? We'll see, because he did not end the season well at all. Now, play some good defenses. The Rams and Arizona do have very good defenses, so keep that in mind. But we'll see if Wilson can come back and bounce back and play like the MVP candidate that he was for, like, say, the first 11 or 12 weeks of the season. I like Seattle in this game. I think it'll be more competitive than the first time they play. But that, you know, again, that environment, I'll take Seattle, you know, 28. I think Seattle 28 to, say, 20. 31-20. I like Seattle by double digits in this game, in this particular game. Look at the night game with New England and Indianapolis. New England, of course, is a 7-point favorite. Of course, New England lost another key defensive player with spikes being done out for the season. Nothing new. I mean, New England has made a habit of losing key players over the course of the season. I mean, you can go down to Gronkowski. I mean, Wolford. I mean, it's been a who's who of names, but it has not stopped the Patriot train. To me, this game is going to come down to whether or not I feel like – I think Indianapolis has to run the ball in terms of carries. I don't think it's about the yardage. I just think they're going to have to keep New England honest. New England has a very good secondary, with Tlaib and McCourty. But what they don't have is is a front seven that can get to Luck. So, you know, how New England's secondary holds up against Indianapolis' weapons will be something to watch, and also Indianapolis keeping Luck upright and running the ball honest enough not only running the ball to keep New England's pass rush off Luck, but running the ball to where Indianapolis cannot zero in on T.Y. Hilton or some of the other weapons, Colt or Fleener, or some of the other weapons on the outside that Indianapolis has. Again, I expect this game to be a very close game. I like New England. I don't think Indianapolis is ready to win a road playoff game in New England. Let me be honest with you. I think they're on their way. They're taking all the right steps. To me, they're ahead of schedule. Let's be honest. They've been to playoffs 2 years in a row with a second-year quarterback, but a second-year quarterback who in 2 to 3 years is going to be the best quarterback in the league. And is a special player. But I don't like winning a road game in New England. Young teams don't win road games in New England. I mean, the kind of teams that win road games in New England is like, you know, the Ravens, who had championship pedigree, veteran team, difficult matchup. Those are the kind of teams that win road games in New England, not young teams. Remember, that is one of the best. That has been the best home field advantage in all of football over the course of the last decade. They've lost some games at home in the playoffs. Okay, lost to the Jets a couple years ago, lost to the Ravens twice in the last 4 years. But I don't think Indianapolis is ready to take that step. I could be wrong, but I think tonight I like New England 24-20. Very close game. I don't think the weather will be a major factor in this game. So that should be a very good game. Would I be shocked? I would be mildly surprised if Indianapolis won this game. Wouldn't be shocked, but mildly surprised. Look at tomorrow. You have San Francisco and Carolina to open the day with the 1 o'clock game. This is going to be a bring your hard hat, leave the women and children at home type of game. This is going to be the most physical game of the weekend, without question. These two teams are two of the best defensive teams in the league, two of the best front sevens, the two best front sevens in the league. And to me, that's going to be the key. Other than the quarterbacks, which always is the key in these type of games between who plays better, between Cam Newton and Kaepernick, which offensive line will be able to block the other's front seven more effectively? That's to me the question. Carolina has 60 sacks this year. 60. Okay. The 49ers, we all know from top to bottom, have the best front seven in all of football. So which one of those offensive lines, to me, plays the best, has the most success against the other opposing front seven? That is the key to the game, because they're going to be very little, like neither team is going to be able to run the ball very well conventionally. Now, Kaepernick could break some runs, and again, they did a tremendous job against Kaepernick the first time, but that was without Michael Crabtree. And again, and the Crabtree factor, which is why the Crabtree factor is the reason why I like San Francisco in this game. Crabtree and Kaepernick have been great in the playoffs. Crabtree has 100 yards receiving in four of his last five playoff games. Kaepernick has had a great, great career as a playoff player. Look at some of his playoff games against Green Bay last year. Played great against Atlanta. He's really been a tremendous playoff player in his short career. So I like San Francisco 14-10. Again, this will be a defense knockdown, drag out game of field. It'll be a game of field position. It'll be a game where one turnover could be the difference. One play could be the difference. These two teams are evenly matched. San Francisco is favored by one, which is fine. They are the more experienced team. They were in the Super Bowl last year. But certainly, if Carolina wins this game, I mean, that it would not be a shock in the least bit if Carolina wins this game. I would not be mild. I won't be shocked. I won't be surprised. I won't be anything if Carolina wins this game. Carolina is a very good football team, not only offensively with Cam Newton, but defensively they're great. Special teams, they are a complete football team. I'm just not sure the experience could be the difference and the factor in this particular game. San Diego at Denver. Point spread is too big. It's too big, in my opinion, 9.5. These are divisional rivals, third time. San Diego played Denver better than anybody this year. Both games were close. San Diego, of course, won decisively in Denver, ran the ball down Denver's throat, held Denver to 20 points. I like San Diego in this game. I'll be honest with you. I think when you want to upset a team, I think that first game out of the box is the game to catch them. When you want to beat a team like Denver or like New England or a favorite team or that's coming off a bye week, I think teams coming off unless they've had major injuries the previous week, I think these wild card teams have an advantage of playing the game of being in a rhythm, in that playoff rhythm, against these teams that have had a couple weeks off. To be honest with you, and it's one of the reasons why you've seen wild card teams in recent memory come into these divisional games and take out these top seeds. San Diego has been in playoff mode for about a month now. Again, this is a divisional game. San Diego has no fear whatsoever of Denver. I like San Diego in this game. I like how they're playing. I like the fact that they're running the ball. I like the fact that they're playing mistake-free football. They're not turning over the ball. Rivers is not forcing throws. Denver's catching San Diego at the wrong time. This was the worst possible matchup. Out of all the matchups that could have happened in the second round, this was the worst for Denver, in my opinion. So I think for the ninth time in his career, Peyton Manning is going to go out in the first round. After just one game in the playoffs. So I like two road teams in San Francisco and San Diego, and I think we're headed towards a San Francisco-Seattle NFC Championship Showdown and a San Diego-New England AFC Championship. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Again, if you haven't heard the news, Alex Rodriguez has been suspended for the entire 2014 Major League Baseball season. That is a reduction from the previous 211 games that have been dished out by Major League Baseball. So they go from 211 to 162. Again, this story just came up when we were doing the show, so I don't have the kind of details on it that I would normally have in it, because I'm not able to listen to the TV and do the show at the same time. But A-Rod, of course, is done for, looks like he's done for the 2014 season. I'm sure, I'm guessing here because I haven't heard anything, I'm sure that there'll be an appeals process. I'm sure that Alex Rodriguez will be some type of appeal on this. I don't think this is going to end with right here. But we'll see what happens with it. The Yankees, again, if the suspension is upheld, the Yankees will have some salary flexibility, because if you lose a player proven to be suspended from PEDs, I believe you get cap or financial relief from that player if he's suspended for PED use. I believe, and I'm pretty sure that's the case. And Alex Rodriguez is scheduled to make $27 million this year, so you know, Yankees can use that money and go in a number of different directions. Not again, there are not a lot of free agents left out here, but there's still a couple that can certainly help you. I mean, the Yankees can get a pitcher. They can get a pitcher without question. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Oakland Review. Enjoy the football. I will see you next week. So long.